Welcome to National Treasury, FSC. We'll try and catch up on time. Two apologies. Three, Honorable Manana, Honorable Madloka, and Honorable McLaughlin. They won't be able to join us today. Any other apologies? Yes, sir.
Honorable Chair, I would like to leave at 12 o'clock, please.
Okay. We'll try and finish by that time. We're planning to finish 11:30, so we need to cover lost ground as much as we can. Any other apologies?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning. I have to, once the briefing is done, and if with your permission, I would like to go to the Finance Committee, who's getting a briefing on the FICA Amendment Bill and the Financial Sector Regulation, which is quite also as important as this. So if, once the briefing is done, if I can be excused, with your permission.
That's fine. Honorable Nyalunga, I told you also to leave at 12. 11. For at 11. Okay. All right. I think let's start so we can catch up. We will start with National Treasury to do their presentations. Before that, yeah.
Honorable Chair, sorry to do this. I understand that we're here just for two briefings by Treasury and by FFC. But because of the urgency and importance of the matter, and I was hoping that the 2 billion rand that is going to now be appropriated for the Brics Bank seems as though it might not be available. I just would like to table a letter for your attention, Honorable Chair. So just we have it on record.
Okay, I'll allow you. Why don't we allow them to present first? Yeah. And then once we open, you can start with that. Okay, National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation we are making is on the national, the New Development Bank Special Appropriation Bill. It's a fairly short presentation if we can manage to get it on the screen. But in the meantime, I'll just speak through the slides since I have them here. As honorable members know, the New Development Bank was established by an agreement between the governments of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It is meant to be multilateral development bank, and the purpose of the bank is to mobilize alternative sources of financing, strengthen the cooperation amongst BRICS countries.
You don't have the presentation.
We don't have it.
You don't have it.
Can we put it on the screen at least?
Yeah.
Okay. And then maybe then we can get somebody to make copies. Please just check on your documents. It seems there is a but it's also on the screen now. Okay, you can continue.
Thank you. As I was the purpose of the bank is to mobilize alternative sources of financing, strengthen the cooperation amongst BRICS countries, and complement existing efforts by other development partners and international financial organizations for global growth and development. These are some of the features of the agreement that South Africa and the other BRICS countries have ratified. You will recall that the agreement was ratified in July by our parliament. And the agreement basically has two founding documents. One is the intergovernmental agreement which captures the broad principles regarding the bank. And the second document is the articles of agreement. The membership of the bank currently is only the founding members that established the bank. However, the articles provide for the inclusion of other United Nations members. In terms of the authorized capital of the bank, it's $100 billion. And basically, the authorized capital determines the extent to which the bank can lend. It doesn't mean that that is how much the countries have to contribute. And what is important to note is the subscribed capital. And of that subscribed capital, the founding members will contribute 20% as the starting capital of the bank. And this is going to be paid over a period of 7 years, which are pre-agreed installments, and they are reflected in the articles of agreement. And quickly run through it. Basically, the BRICS countries will maintain at least 55% of the voting share of the bank. At a later stage, the bank will, as I said, will be open to other sovereigns. And the agreement has been that should one of the founding members take up the agreed shares, it will first be open to the existing founding members before they invite others outside. It has three levels of governance: the Board of Governors, which are the ministers of finance of the BRICS member countries, a Board of Directors, and management. And the chair of the board is chosen on a rotation basis. Each founding member nominates the Board of Directors, and the president is from one of the BRICS countries on a rotation basis and serves for a period of 5 years. Major policy decisions of the bank will be taken by the Board of Governors by consensus at their annual meetings. And how will the bank provide support? It's going to provide support in two ways. First is through the financial instruments that the bank will have endorsed for support in the form of loans, guarantees, equity participation, and any other financial instrument that the bank management agrees to use. And it will support both private and public projects in member countries. And the articles also provide for support to non-member emerging market in developing countries, but this will have to be through a vote to give the members the right to decide which member country can be supported. And also built in is the establishment of regional offices, and members will be aware that South Africa will host the first regional office of the BRICS Bank, referred to as the Regional Center, Africa Regional Center. A special fund was agreed amongst the member countries to support project preparation, and China has committed to be the largest contributor. And the Africa Regional Center will be situated in Johannesburg, and the head office is in Shanghai. Now, coming to the special appropriation bill, the purpose of the bill is to appropriate the additional money in the 2015-16 financial year for the National Treasury to be able to pay the first installment of $500 million, approximately, to the New Development Bank. And ideally, this request for capital contribution should have been made during the previous budget process. This was not done, as the ratification members will recall, only went through to Parliament in July this year. Therefore, there was no, the agreement had no legal standing and as a result could not be budgeted for. And therefore, the bill proposes the appropriation of an amount in rent equivalent to about 2 billion, depending at the time when we'll be paying it in. At the appropriate rate of exchange, and this will be paid out of the National Revenue Fund. In terms of the financial implications, the proposed appropriation is deficit neutral since it is conditional on the payment into the revenue fund of the required proceeds from the sale of state-owned assets in the 2015-16 financial year. And National Treasury has submitted inputs to the MTEC process for the bank's capital contribution for 2016-17 fiscal year and beyond. And future contributions will follow the normal budget process. In short, that is what we're presenting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can Treasury deal with all your matters? So we discuss them once. You also have the finance bill. Yeah, let's deal with that.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Gillian Wilson, Chief Director, Administrative Services in the National Treasury. I'm presenting on the finance bill for the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities and on the Presidency. The first slide is just an outline of the slide in the presentation, the summary of a finance bill, the 2008-09 unauthorized expenditure for the presidency, 2010-11 unauthorized expenditure for the presidency, and the 10-11 unauthorized expenditure for the Department of Women, Children and People with Disability. The department just became a new department, which is the Department for Women. Just a summary of the bill. The bill is aimed at implementing the recommendation of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts on unauthorized expenditure and funding mechanism. The recommendations were adopted by the National Assembly on the 23rd of June. The finance bill provides for the authorization of national government unauthorized expenditure arising from 2004-05, 2007-08, 2008-09 and 2010-11 financial years. The bill follows the procedure for authorization of unauthorized expenditure as outlined in section 34(1)(a) and B of the PFMA. Just continuing the summary of the finance bill, the following presentation is confined to the treatment of the unauthorized expenditure incurred by two of the four affected national departments. So this presentation will only deal with the Presidency and the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. In terms of which the bill authorized that unauthorized expenditure incurred by the Presidency and the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities will be appropriated as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund to cover the over expenditure in the vote's appropriations. The next slide just give us a summary of where the over expenditure occurred. I'm talking about the 2008-09 for the presidency. It occurred in administration, program one, the main part of it. The total over expenditure is 40 14.5 million. And then in terms of economic classification, the obvious expenditure occurred in your goods and services category. Just to summarize what caused the unauthorized expenditure, the OVA expenditure for 2008 and 2009, it was mainly due to the hosting of the national audit and award ceremony, legal fees that was not anticipated and budgeted for, also due to the travel and subsistence and the related expenses incurred for the mediation in Zimbabwe. Leave gratuity payments made to the former deputy president, and also the hosting of the National Disability Summit, United Nations Conventions, and the creation of additional ministries in the presidency. With regard to the 8 to the 10-11 unauthorized expenditure, just to give a summary where the over expenditure took place. It was mainly in program one and also mainly goods and services. The total unauthorized expenditure is 28.4 million. Then we just gave a summary of what caused the over expenditure. It's mainly due to accruals carried forward from the 2019 financial year due to the creation of additional ministries for national planning and performance monitoring and evaluation following the government restructuring in 2010. Also, legal fees, travel and assistance due to increasing international commitment by the principals in conflict resolution processes on the continent, which is not planned for and fell outside the adjustment appropriation budget process. Also due to computer services to address additional capacity in the presidency emanating from new ministries, as well as costs relating to the presidential hotline. And also due to leave gratuities obligation and municipal transfers for vehicle licenses. Most of these expenditure fell outside of the adjustment budget and couldn't be budgeted for. Then on the Department of Women, the expenditure, this slide gives you an overview of where the over expenditure took place. It was mainly administration. And also the largest part was for goods and services. The following slide just gives a summary of what caused the unauthorized expenditure. Since the inception of the department, the budget for the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities has been growing in real terms. Our understanding with the department has been that it should spend within its budget and manage its budget pressures through the budget process. The department overspent 3.7 million or 4% of the budget. It was due to international travel and accommodation, celebration of National Women's Day, and also telecommunications related expenses. Since the department occurred the authorized expenditure, the department went through a turnaround process and also revised its communication policies to be implemented in the department. I think the Standing Committee on Public Accounts has recommended that the unauthorized expenditure be financed as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. The Department of Women no longer exists. It's now only the Department of Women. The additional funding recommended by SCOBA should be allocated to the UN successor Department of Women. I'm also presenting on Department of Social Development. in 2007 and 2008, the Department of Social Development underspent by 37.7 million. However, there was an overspending against the comprehensive social security program of 24.1 million, which caused unauthorized expenditure. This was driven by overspending on social grants. The Department of Social Development overspent their social assistance. The amount of 62.45 was budgeted for, and 26 million was overspent, which relates to 4% of the total budget for the program. Due to the underspending in sub-programs, which is program 2, the total underspending is 24.1 million. Because the allocation for program 2 was specifically allocated, the total unauthorized expenditure that occurred in this area was 26.1 million. Overspending in social assistance budget was due to the old age foster care, care dependence and child support grant, and was mainly because of the child overspending in the child support grant. So the main driver here of the overspending was the child support grant. It was attributed to the age extension of policy for the social for the child support grant. In 2005-06, the child support grant age eligibility has been extended from 11 years up to 14 years. Hence, in 2004 and 5 and 5 and 6, the child support grant population grew by 2.9 million. This led to large fluctuations in unpredictability in the child support grant beneficiary numbers. 2.2 million additional child support grant beneficiaries came into the system over the course of 2005, 6 and 6-7. In 2008-7-8, an additional 360,000 child support grant beneficiaries came into the system. The child support grant take up in 2007-8 was 82%, which is the highest since 2004-5 and 2012-13. The child support grant rate in the previous year was 78%, and in 2008-9 it was 80.1%. So I think the high take-up of the child support grant in that particular year was an anomaly. Further, there was large fluctuation in reporting, in reported social child support grant beneficiaries, leading to uncertainty in the year-end numbers. Additionally, 166 million was paid to the Eastern Cape and Free State in April 2007. This was due to invoices not being paid in the previous year. They actually made an application for rollover which was not granted by the National Treasury, so that money needed to be paid in the following financial year to the Eastern Cape and the Free State. The social grant program is demand driven. The behavioral aspects of the program makes it unpredictable. Apart from the behavior related to the take-up of social grants, accumulation of payback, application complexities, and external risk all need to be factored into projections. A variation of 1% in the model is generally acceptable. Overspending of 26 million against the budget of 63 billion in 7 and 8 was a 0.04% variation. Then the recommendation that we made to SCOPA, this overspend cannot directly be related to any negligence or lack of oversight, and thus cannot be recovered from any person. approval be granted in terms of Section 34(1) of the PFMA to authorize over expenditure as is a recharge against the National Revenue Fund. And that's also what SCOPA recommended in the finance bill. Additional systems in place so that over expenditure doesn't take place in future. The three main stakeholders, SASSA, Department of Social Development and National Treasury, each run their own independent projections to monitor social grant expenditure. Quarterly projection meetings is held between SASSA, Social Development and National Treasury. There's monthly model updates, quarterly expenditure report, and also an adjustment factor of 1% is basically incorporated in the model of calculating the social grant. Thank you.
Good morning, Committee. My name is Owen Wilcox. I'm the Chief Director for Economic Services in the National Treasury and Public Finance Division. I think you have the presentation in front of you. Apologies for the late circulation of the presentation. The matter we need to deal with is unauthorized expenditure by the Department of Trade and Industry. This unauthorized expenditure took place over many years, but it's entered into the annual report in 2004-2005 fiscal year. As you can see, the total amount is $37 million. There are four different categories that I need to speak to. The first is a bilateral investment treaty. The second is a staff debt amount, a very small amount of $125,000. The general export incentive scheme debt write-off is the major majority of the amount, and it's about $31 million. And other debts, a small amount again of $25,000. Just to give you the recommendation up front, the Treasury's recommendation to SCOPA was that the unauthorized expenditure was beyond the Department's reasonable control and that it should be appropriated from the National Revenue Fund. And SCOPA also recommended the direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. Just to go and speak about the individual issues in a bit more detail. As the custodian of the bilateral investment treaties, the Department of Trade and Industry is liable if there's any breach of the treaties. In this case, there was Pumlani Lodge argued that the value of their investment had declined because of insufficient policing. The argument was that the police had not had enough, not enough visible policing, and that also that once prosecution had taken place, that the offenders did not get sufficiently long jail terms. There's a tribunal that looks at breaches of the investment treaties, and the tribunal found that government was liable for R6 million. There was an amount for the award in DTI's voted funds, but the interest amount was R6.1 million, and that was the unauthorized amount. In terms of the second category that I'm dealing with is staff debts. Usually staff debts are recovered from staff immediately. So if for instance there's an overpayment of a salary or leave days or a bursary that is not being repaid, that amount is recouped immediately. In this case, what happened was that staff had resigned or retired from the department, and there are a number of cases. But basically the funds were written off because their debtors couldn't be traced, the recovery would be uneconomical, or recovery would cause undue hardship. In one scenario, there was a driver of the department who owed an amount, but because he had retired and was didn't have a large pension, it just felt that recovering the amount would cause undue hardship. Just to give you an example of the amount, these are not large amounts here. We're talking R125,000 in total. The majority of the money comes from the general export incentive scheme. This is going back quite a long way. The scheme was set up in the late 80s and early 90s to boost exports, but there was also another another reason for it. It was a dual purpose scheme. It was nominally to boost exports and as a subsidy to exports, but it was also used to evade sanctions. The scheme had very loose documentary requirements. Basically, all you had to do to get the subsidy was to export something, and then you had to go to customs and excise. They would give you a form saying that you had exported X amount of goods, and then you would present that form to the DTI, and the money would be paid to you. The scheme also required that every firm that were the beneficiaries of the scheme had to keep documentation relating to the scheme for 5 years after they'd received any sort of subsidy. When Trevor Manuel was the Minister of Trade and Industry, he instituted an audit of the scheme to see if there was any abuse of the scheme and any sort of overexpenditure and unauthorized expenditure. And what was found was that there were a number of firms that had overclaimed based, as I said, on the fairly loose documentary requirements of the scheme. So all of those firms were listed, and debtors were raised on this against the department. There were 22 debtors that did not pay in full, and because they did not pay in full, this will be counted as unauthorized expenditure. So in 14 cases, it was because the department reached a settlement with the debtors, rather than going through a costly court process, litigation, lawyers, the department used negotiation and obtained a lesser amount, obviously not the full amount, but it was the view of the department that it would be better for the fiscus to have that smaller amount at much less cost. Five of the companies could not be traced. The companies that either stopped business or just ceased operating. In one case, one of the directors of the company had actually left the country already. And then two other companies had no assets that could be recovered. So in all cases, the full amounts of the debt could not be repaid, and so the debt was written off, and this is unauthorized expenditure. And this, I think, was related quite directly to the recommendation from the Treasury. We thought that there was not really the department was not at fault in terms of the process that they carried out, because the department did try to recover the debt where possible, but was not successful in all cases. And the last amount is a fairly small amount, is 25,000. An official was dismissed from the DTI, and the official took the DTI to the CCMA. The CCMA awarded the official an amount of 25,000, and that amount was paid to the South African Labour Market and Adult Workers Union and to the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council. So once again, the small amounts. Just to summarize, go back to the overview, and just the recommendation is that there's a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund.
And that's all from Treasury. Yes. Those are the two issues. Honourable members, do you want to engage with this, or you want to hear the FFC first? Should we hear the FFC? Okay. FFC, ready? Let's hear what you have to say, and then we will discuss and debate.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity and invitation to the FFC to address you on these two matters. I'm Nico Stakler, Commissioner at the FFC, and with me is Dr. Ramos Mabuku, the Director of Research, who will make the presentation. Also, Haris Dawood, who's sitting here, and all the researcher, and Henry Eckstein, our Parliamentary Liaison Officer. The main presentation would be on the BRICS bill. We think it's a very important development. 7 years after the BRICS initiative started, the bank was the real first concrete manifestation of this initiative. And now it becomes very concrete for us when suddenly there's money to be paid into this bank. So without really further ado, let me ask then Dr. Mbuke to go through the presentation with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, honorable members. Starting with the new development and special appropriation bill, this first slide just goes through the mechanics of the bill, the amount to be appropriated from the National Revenue Fund for the first capital installment to the tune of 150 million rand, which is approximately, sorry, 150 million US dollars, which is approximately 2.09 billion rand. That amount was not included in the current 2015-16 budget, as the ratification for the agreement has not yet been finalized and only got finalized in July of this year. The first clause we want to draw attention to is 1.3 of the Special Appropriation Bill, which enables the Minister of Finance to impose conditions on the appropriation to enable transparency and effective management of funds and to stop appropriation until any conditions imposed are met. And we think this is quite an important condition because there is the Minister of Finance representing the country. There is a clawback condition put into the bill through 1.3. Then 1.4 provides for the reporting of the stoppage of the appropriation to the relevant parliamentary committees. And we think this is most important, particularly for our parliamentary committees, that there is a clause put in there that allows direct oversight on any stoppage that would have taken place, including reasons and rationale, and so on. Now, four areas of background, just to get members up to speed on what has been taking place around the area. From the fifth BRICS summit held in 2013, a decision to establish a BRICS bank was announced. The Financial and Fiscal Commission briefed the Standing Committee on Finance on arguments for and against the New Development Bank back in May of this year. And that presentation can be made available to the committee that we use for that purpose, but it's now in the public domain. Since then, the New Development Bank is now its headquarters firmly established in Shanghai with a regional office in Johannesburg, the African Regional Center, that's been set up in Johannesburg. Up to this stage, no loan has as yet been dispersed. As I will say later, when it comes to cost-benefit analysis, it is too early to come up with definitive answers because we don't know the basket of actual projects that will go through. So what we have done are hypothetical examples of that are in the realm of possibilities, just to see where it can potentially go, and with effective oversight and management, hopefully those hypothetical projects can be beneficial or harmful to the country. So that's why we put in that up to this stage when we're discussing the Special Appropriation Bill, there's no loan that has been dispersed as yet. So questions about cost-benefit analysis of it are a bit premature at this stage. Parliament ratified the BRICS agreement 18th of June 2015. And finally, the University of Western Cape, Financial and Fiscal Commission, and Human Sciences Research Council, they partnered last month in October to have an international BRICS conference held at the University of Western Cape, where we discussed experiences from the different countries with the BRICS arrangement. And from that experience, we're able to get questions from experts in the different countries. First, extremely well represented with participants from all the five countries, experts working in the field. We're able to get a sense of the status of the arrangement in the other BRIC countries relative to South Africa, which makes it BRICS. How far are we in terms of catching up with the rest of the team, and what our strengths and weaknesses around the arrangement were. So in terms of background, that's how we have been involved with the BRICS arrangement. Now, the funding considerations in a bit more detail, but a lot of it, because members want to leave early, I want to go into the details. But just to say, there are two elements that members need to factor into understanding the funding considerations. The first are the callable shares and the paid-in shares, so two elements. And the paid-in shares are what we're discussing today in terms of the special appropriation bill to the tune of $2 billion US dollars. The callable shares, which is the large amount, are not a part of the direct budget process that we deal with, but appear in the budget review documentation under provisions, just for purposes of transparency. So that's where you get a lot of the other information on the callable shares part of our involvement with this bank. But what, as I said, what we're discussing now is the paid-in shares of the $2 billion US dollars. And the contribution is spread up to 21-22. And this figure here just shows you the appropriations that will be expected from the National Revenue Fund up to 2021-22. And as you can see, every year it will rise slightly to take into account expectations around what is thought to be the relevant exchange rate at that time. But depending on the exchange rate, as the colleagues from National Treasury said, those figures could change in local currency terms. Now, what are the pros and cons? In terms of the pros and cons of the bank, and this is really ex-ante analysis in the sense that we, as I said at the beginning, we still haven't disbursed any loan through the bank yet. But what can one say ahead of the operations actually taking place? On the pro side, the first and important one that we see is that the articles of agreement for the bank allow for the option of financing certain projects in local currency. And we think that reduces systemic risk associated with foreign exchange lending. And we see this as potentially improving, particularly our domestic debt markets for municipalities, which are at very formative stages currently. But of course, for this pro to materialize, modalities of local bond issue must be developed in conjunction with retail investors' awareness and the education programs, so that we really tap into the opportunity provided there. And the second pro from the exercise is likely to come from innovations, modernization in terms of risk management, monitoring techniques that comes from international banks. And through that, it's very likely that there will be higher mobilization of savings, and as a result, leading to higher levels of investment, because savings finance investment. So that's a pro, again, looking at it from the perspective that one of our biggest macroeconomic problems is the low level of savings to finance investment currently. So that can unblock that bottleneck, that is a bottleneck for the overall national development that we see as a potential. The final pro that we see is that it's likely to increase stability. Stability in the sense that this is a large international diversified bank, which is safer and has a lower probability of failure than small national banks taken together. So that will lead most probably to less flighty depositors that will be a part of the new development bank. Okay, what are the negatives or the potential cons on the other side of the ledger that we can see? In the main three that we think strong management needs to be exercised in order to risk manage around these funds. It may increase volatility, this arrangement. And that volatility most likely will work through import shocks from home or other BRIC countries. So when there's an import shock, like the one we've just experienced when China sneezed, what can happen is that when that happens, and it's serious enough in any one of the five countries, that can have a contagion effect spreading to through the system. In the worst case scenario, can possibly result in the country simply backing up and leaving the arrangement. Luckily, the articles of agreement have got conditions on how to enter or exit from the arrangement that you will then need to enforce. So that's how to mitigate against that potential con. The second one is stability of the exchange rate and inflation rate. Already we've seen that in the past 5 months, for example, the value of paid-in amount is escalated by 3.9 billion runs. And depending, so one of the key risks is around exchange rate risk that we need to keep at the back of our minds. Fortunately, in our case, we have we have transparent exchange rate management systems effected mostly through the Reserve Bank of South Africa, and that's the risk that they take on behalf of the country. And we haven't heard from the Reserve Bank any reason to change exchange rate management to date. So there are ways of managing stability of exchange rate assistance that go to the core of our exchange rate management regime in South Africa. As the large presence of new development bank financial products could potentially crowd out some domestic banks that may not be able to compete for deposits with the new development bank. So one could see a situation where some relatively weaker domestic banks could be chased out of the market by this bigger and more efficient arrangement. And again, depending on where you sit, it could be a good thing of efficiency taking over in the banking system where you compete or you perish, because it's the banking system you don't want to keep the inefficient domestic banks, or if you have other concerns, you may think we probably want to give them time to establish, grow, and be able to compete with that new development bank. So the argument here can run either way. But in our discussion with some of the big banks here, the feeling to a large extent is that there is no fear of a crowd out, because the magnitude of the financial problem required across Africa is too big for any one bank to be able to satisfy the demand for resources required to develop the rest of Africa. So any resources that come in will, in one of the discussions we had, be a drop in the ocean compared to the actual resources required. So we are probably not at a stage where crowding out of some players will be a big issue. Could happen as a margin, but not something that will be destabilizing. Now, coming to the budgetary implications of the special appropriation bill, what I was talking about on the pros and cons would be if you want the countrywide cost-benefit analysis just short of actual numbers. Now, on the budgetary implications, what are the core issues? Well, the most important one for us today is that this amount appropriated from the National Revenue Fund for the first installment will come from the sale of state assets, and is due in January 2016. Putting aside issues of whether the money will be available January 2016, the core budgetary issues from our side is that a good argument, and we said this with the ESCOM special appropriation bill, so we are being consistent here, the measure is likely to be budget neutral. Okay? So assuming it is budget neutral, let's take that as an assumption. Still, the government's balance sheet may still be negatively affected. What is the key thing? The key issue is if you were getting dividends from ownership of an asset, and you liquidate that asset and put it into some other asset that is not as attractive as where you're getting out of, that can negatively affect your balance sheet. But if argument. In this particular case, and this is not to take a side at ESCOM, in this particular case, given the magnitude of the new development bank and the local assets that we own, the government owns on our behalf, it's really very likely that this new development bank will be much more attractive, both in terms of sheer scale, size, sophistication, mobility across different countries. So concerns about the effect on the balances could probably be turned around compared to the discussion we had on the ESCOM special appropriation bill for you, for instance. This is a whole different asset that we are liquidating domestic assets and investing into. So that's the first point. The second point is that sale of state assets to finance these installments is a one-off cash injection. And once you sell it, you no longer have it. If you sell off your house and you don't buy another house, it means you no longer have a house. You can have income that you consume if it's for consumption, but if another rainy day comes, you no longer have the asset. So that's around these kinds of ways of financing installments, and that we cannot call on the same asset that was sold to finance for future expenditure needs. We do it here, we've exercised our right, and that's it. The decision to sell state assets, in our opinion, could actually signal one strong principle for the Appropriations Committee. It could be viewed to signal that government is saying the impact of the installment on the fiscal framework has reached limit on the deputy GDP tolerance level. So it doesn't want to increase debt to GDP level. And instead of borrowing, it's actually liquidating or selling off on its assets. If they had come with a proposal to borrow in order to put in the bank, then the Appropriations Committee should be extremely worried about commitment to a leveling off of growth in the debt. This proposal should be viewed in that light of commitment to stabilizing the growth in the debt to GDP ratio. Now, in the overall assessment around here, we think quite big principal issues are taking place. Selling state assets to obtain appropriated amount can be viewed as an important mechanism which forces government at the very highest political level to internalize the cost of financing new projects, especially those that are not included in the current budget. So if this money were to come from X money, usually that is a soft target, and discussion around it is not as robust. But if within the highest political level, you are talking about reducing your state assets or selling off your state assets, that forces internalization of decisions that we take right there, because you can actually see that you are running down your assets. So it's a matter now of compromises. What do I cut so that I get this, not that I can have more, of course, which tax money can allow you to do and doesn't force you to do robust discussion or robust trade-offs at that high level. And importantly, from the Financial and Fiscal Commission side, we think those robust discussions where you're forced to trade-off are important for strengthening future fiscal sustainability, because it means every action or every new project that is proposed is financed through some internalization of the costs. And that's the principle that an appropriations committee wants to infuse and exercise oversight on. Yeah, so it really takes us into that space where it's no longer more of everything and we've got the money to do everything. For every new thing that we do, what is it that we cut? And that's the principle which is playing itself out right here. Having said that, the committee should request government to ensure that the country's ability to secure lending is in place. In other words, our ability to package projects that are good for national development and get finances, that's where this is going to end on. And we think the committee, the Appropriations Committee, should demand that information and ensure that the strategy is in place, but that we benefit from our involvement with this. Now, on the finance bill, we really don't have much to say here. Our main point that we make from the finance bill is that we support the bill, but we are really concerned that it has taken this long. Taking this long to take decisions such as this paralyzes the system. So the Appropriations Committee should really be concerned with the long time that it has taken to deal with these things around the finance. So that's the main point from the Commission.
Thank you. And just to say that Commissioner Daniel Clark has just joined us.
Thank you.
Welcome, Commissioner Plaki. Honorable members, that's it. We start with which one? BRICS Bank. Yeah, there are any comments on do we need to appropriate $2 billion for the BRICS Bank? There's also for members, there is, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one who has it. You all have it. Yeah, there's more information on the, it's in the articles of agreements and so on, if you want to read more about the bank. What do we say? Mm-hmm. Honorable Sheikh Imam, you start, Honorable Sheikh, you follow.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation. And I must allude that when the FFC speaks, I like to listen, because you indeed give us the problems and you give us solutions, which is the way forward. I don't know if I have my facts right, though. We're talking about $2 billion. We are going now almost to the last quarter, which means very soon we'll be looking for the next $4 billion, am I correct? So it'll be $6 billion. Because we are running behind with this $2 billion. So we're not really, in essence, going to be looking for $2 billion. Very shortly we're going to be looking for an additional $4 billion. The second thing is just the issue of this bank lending purposes of development and things. I'm hoping that our municipalities will be able to, borrowing expensively, I see, will be able to borrow from this bank, provided it's at a much lower interest if it is. But in essence, whether we're borrowing from them or where we're still borrowing, because this bank is obviously going to lend at an interest. I don't think there's a special agreement arrangement that will be at a much lower rate, so it will be a benefit, especially to those in the BRICS, in this agreement. My third concern is when we talk about selling of these non-strategic assets. I don't know what anymore is non-strategic and what is, because in my understanding, and I'm going to put this in ABC language, what would you rather do if you have two cars, one is running perfect and the other car is giving you problems every day and you know you can't fix it? Would you go and continue spending more money, or would you rather sell that and keep the good one? And you can see we have now sold, we're talking about assets, and we're talking about in what benefit it is going to be to us at the later, and it's going to affect our balance sheet. It's not only affecting us in terms of now getting rid of the assets, but it's also affecting our balance sheet in terms of revenue, future revenue as well. Like we sold the Vodacom shares, which was giving us revenue, rather than selling those like South African Airways, which is we're bailing out year in and year out, and there's nothing, you know, nothing in sight that, you know, maybe we could find a solution to it. So that is what my concern, and I do agree, we're talking about now, we're going to sell the assets. What is going to happen eventually at a later stage? Where is the money actually going to come from? Or are we going to be selling more assets in terms of that? Are we just limiting it first to the issue of the bank share and then we'll go to audition, or are you talking about?
I don't know if members want to comment on both, that's pretty fine.
Okay.
You want to
say? Yeah. Okay, with regards to the also in terms of the injection from the different BRICS countries, there's not an equal contribution in my understanding, correct? Right? So how do you then work out, will there not be any challenges in terms of which countries will get what portion of development aid in terms of funding? Will there not be challenges at some stage with regards to that? That's my concern. Yes, there's another concern when you talk about when the going gets tough, people can just stay out. That is a fact, and actually that can happen. I don't want to agree on the one statement when we say we think that we have decided maybe we're reaching the limits in terms of borrowing, and that's why we're going to the issue of selling these assets. In my understanding, it's not the case, because we are still borrowing because of the shortfall in terms of revenue and expenditure. We are still bailing out people that are not performing rather than selling them. So I don't believe that we are going to the stage where we really realize the impact of that. And I'm hoping we're not going to become a victim like the other day, Puerto Rico again, they've gone bankrupt like Greece. I'm hoping we're not going to continue. In terms of the unauthorized expenditure, it is a concern, but like I think recommendations have been made, and you've alluded to the fact that some of this is not really, you know, they could not actually prevent this in terms of department. But I'm hoping that these things that you are identifying, we're going to find the solutions to it. So there's not a repetition. And we're finding year in, year in, these things are happening and again and again and again. So I'm hoping that we'll find a solution to it once and for all and say, listen, we're not going to be perfect. We all know that. We'll have challenges. And like I said previously, we have a lot of success, but these challenges is coming back to bite us every day without fail. So when a department has a challenge, and you have all made these recommendations, the expectation is that you try to find a solution and remedy that for the next financial year. And that I'm seeing, I'm not seeing happening. That is what my concern is. I'm going to stop there for now, so I'll give my colleagues and perhaps come back if I need.
Honorable Fick.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I think from the DA, we are disappointed at this point in time that we didn't support the bill, the BRICS bill. We also probably didn't support the appropriation bill. We thought that the money that was raised in terms or from the Vodacom shares would be used for the crisis in education that we currently have. So obviously that's something that we have to deal with in the future. So before I come
comment on the presentation, and I got your permission to table a letter. And because, as I said, this 2.4 million rand surplus that is in the in the budget or that we've raised, there are obviously alternative sources of funding that we have to look at. So can I get your permission, Honourable Chairperson, to table this letter? Thank you. It's not for discussion now, it's for your attention and for you to respond. Thank you. So I'll table this letter, thanks. So as far as the bill, and I'm going to deal with the appropriations bill first, the special appropriation. Advice was sought from the state legal advisor, okay? And the advice that was given, that in terms of certain conditions in the agreement which we have in front of us, is that the suspensive condition, the suspensive condition be removed from the bill, and the bill be introduced as soon as there is certainty regarding the availability of the $150 million in the National Revenue Fund. So in other words, we didn't have to rush, because what that now means is that the first payment, which is due in January, which was $2.02 billion, which has now already gone up to $2.2 billion, and we've heard that it's going to go up to 3.9 already. Okay, we have issues there. But I'm just referring firstly to the advice that was given by the legal advisor, and the recommendation was that it should be or state that as soon as $150 million US dollars is available, South Africa meets its obligation timely and immediately thereafter in the Adjustment Appropriation Act. So that would obviously be a disappointment as to why we did not take the advice. So now we have money that we could have used elsewhere, which we are using for a bill which we're not so sure what the benefits are going to be. That's as far as that is concerned. Then, in terms of the shareholders, we are told that they are at the time of the formation, five shareholders, which will share equally $2 billion each. And new shareholders can apply and be accepted. Now, can I just ask, if that is the case, and it might not be an answer now, would that new member then also be an equal member, which then obviously would result in buying of equal shares from the others? That's a question I have. In the bill, it states that the minister can, sorry, may, in that 1.3, which was in the presentation as well, the minister 1.3, the minister may, I've got the wrong one, sorry. The minister may impose conditions on the appropriation. Now, you know, and sorry to refer back to the Eskom Special Appropriations Bill, but that bill also stated that the minister may, and there were no conditions in that the minister imposed, and as a result of that, we had to convert a loan to equity. So there's a concern when you have language like that in a bill where the minister may, which he does not exercise his rights. The callable shares, I know there was a brief explanation, and forgive me for not understanding it, because I understand you stated that it was a provision, but it's still there. So can you, if you don't mind, just give us a clear explanation for my benefit, and I'm not so sure why I don't understand that. My colleague here also referred to the non-strategic assets. Now, I'm a little confused, likely not too much, but when you talk about a Vodacom share that's generating income, and you call it a non-strategic share, then it just doesn't add up to me, because you probably have a lot of other state assets that you could dispose of, but you're disposing of an asset that is income generating, and if
I can recall, when we asked for a figure, which wasn't inviting, we got a figure of the loss of income, because as much as it's going to, well, we know for a fact that it's going to be taken off the balance sheet, so it's no longer there, but it does affect our revenue, because that revenue that was generated by your investment income was part of the income. It's part of the income. So what is the figure, if we can get an answer, that we have foregone as a result of this disposal of the Vodacom shares? So it is a concern to me, to us. Thank you. Then if I can just briefly comment on the finance bill, and I understand when the presentation was done that it was stated that it's small amounts, of course it's small amounts. But the problem with small amounts is that when you add up all the small amounts, we're talking about 110 million rand that we're talking about. So I don't think there is relevance in the small amounts. I think we are asking to accept and to support a bill where there's been unauthorized expenditure. And we understand these reasons given, but unauthorized expenditure, we cannot afford unauthorized expenditure. So why we are going to support, or why we should support a bill where unauthorized expenditure of 110 million rand, it's just, it can't be a wise decision. We understand, and I'm not, and please, look, you know, it might seem as though I'm not supporting women, children, and the state. It's not that. It's not. It's the principle of the unauthorized expenditure that I'm referring to. So it's not where the money is going to. So it's just an issue that I would like to concern. The bill also talks about, on the first page, the Act does not detract from or limit any power or duty to take appropriate steps to recover unauthorized expenditure from the responsible official or former. Now, that is stated in the bill, but I notice in the presentation it is stated that nobody is responsible, so no action will be taken. Now, that's counterproductive. So that's problematic when that is the case. And I believe that is a case of all unauthorized expenditure. Well, sorry, most of the unauthorized expenditure that happens within the department is that there is no consequence for non-compliance. Thanks, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on, and thank for the briefing, both. My question is on the DTI unauthorized expenditure, whereby they're saying the stuff that's written off. I just want to check why you said that this could not be recovered because staff had resigned or retired. Why can't you deduct the money maybe from the UIF or other way of getting this money? That's my question, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Nyalunga. Shall I allow them to respond and then we'll take another round? Oh, Honorable Torres.
Yeah, just one thing on the issue of where it is said that nobody could have been held responsible for overspending. If it could be clarified whether that means that the interpretation of that would is that overspending was found to have been necessary, not because somebody was had acted irresponsibly. Would that be the correct interpretation, or is something more to it? Is there something more to it than that? I think that, Chair, just as a last comment, the issue of selling shares on non-strategic assets, and the examples being given here of Vodacom or any other private enterprise. I think it should be accepted that whilst we appreciate government investment in private enterprises, for purposes of itself generating further revenue, we should also understand that when it becomes necessary, government has the right to sell off its shares and pull out of the private private enterprise. And it can re-enter that space at an appropriate moment when state finances are good. What we should not propagate, as I begin to listen, as I hear some of us beginning to suggest, is a wholesale sell-off of state assets, as has been mentioned about SAA. Eskom has been mentioned in the past, and that's something that we must be careful of, because these are state-owned companies, the public companies. They can't just be sold off as easily as that. Otherwise, you take away state power to engage as an equal partner in the development of the economy. Thank you, Chairman.
You can respond, and I'll take another question if they want to start. Treasury?
Yeah. Okay. Chair, perhaps I take the questions on the New Development Bank, and my colleagues will respond to those that I were not able to hear with. In terms of the installments, as I explained earlier on, the first installment was due 6 months after the ratification of the agreement, and the 6 months lapses. If you look at July, it's basically January. So by January, all member countries ought to have deposited their certificate of encashment for the money. And the second installment is due 18 months after ratification. And so what that means is that the next installment will fall into the 2016-17 budget cycle. And as we said, the National Treasury has made an application through MTEC, so it will go through normal budgetary processes. In terms of the contribution by member countries, all the founding member countries hold equal shares, so it means that they all contribute equally to the capital contribution. So each member country will contribute in terms of the paid-in capital, the equal amount of $2 billion. And what happens to new members? Will new members take up shareholding on equal shareholding? No. If you look at the articles, article number 5B basically says that new members will be allowed into the bank on the terms and conditions under which the bank will determine at the time. So the founding members have not yet developed the terms under which they will allow new members in. And I suppose that is why the founding members decided to have two agreements. The first one basically protecting the 55% of shareholding by the founding members. And the balance will then be determined at the time in terms of how they enter. The question on callable capital. Callable capital normally refers to the capital that the bank may require at any given time once the paid-in capital has been put in. So say after a number of years the bank requires a new injection of capital, then the shareholders will need to decide if that amount is put in. So for example, in the case of the new members, the callable capital is 80% of the total subscribed capital. The paid-in capital is 20%. And if I look at where South Africa also has shareholding in multilateral development institutions, if I look, for example, at the World Bank and the African Development Bank, I do not, in the time that I've been in the Treasury, recall a call for capital. Most of the time there will be a general increase in capital, and in that case it will be left to member countries to decide whether they want to contribute. Sometimes it will be called a special capital increase, and countries decide whether they want to contribute or not. So it's not always automatic that that amount will be called, and if it's called, that you will be expected to contribute the amount. I think those are the questions that I had. Indeed, I don't know, from a legal perspective.
Just on two issues that was raised by honourable members. The one was on the issues raised by the staple advisors. They raised it as an implementation issue, not as a legal issue, the suspensive condition, in their opinion. The problem with the proposal they made is that if we wait for the money to flow in, we want to be able to pass the bill in time in order for the appropriation to be going through and the payment to be made in January 2016. So if we waited for the actual payment, and the anticipation, or we expect that the second payment for the Vodacom shares is happening in November, it should be in time, and it's additional money that's from the Vodacom shares that will be used for funding this amount. So I think the puzzle I made was not practical in terms of waiting if we want to meet the installment, the first installment, in terms of the agreement that was ratified. The second issue, I just want to indicate the ISCOM bills that the committee dealt with earlier this year, there was two bills. The one converted the loan to equity, and then there was a second special appropriation bill, and that's the one that also has a similar provision on imposing conditions. So I'm not sure, and there was conditions imposed on that, the money that was transferred to ESCOM. But the loan conversion to equity was a different matter. The loan agreement provision was or bill or act at the time. Everything that was done was there was a loan agreement concluded between government and ESCOM, but that loan was changed into equity. So it's not a question of conditions that was imposed through the legislation as such.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Sheikh Imam raised the issue of the repetition of issues and how we can actually get towards solutions. Just if I can speak on the DTR side, the main issue was the lax requirements for that scheme, the DEIS. And I can just assure the members that subsequent schemes have been a lot more strict in terms of their auditing requirements. So you still claim on certain events happening, but those events are audited now by the department, so that it's a lot more there's much more stringent conditions attached before any funding flows. And obviously, I think that would offset any sort of concerns we have about overpayments. The Honourable Nyalunga asked about stock debts. The main issue there was that people obviously left the department. We can't take money from UIF because state civil servants aren't members of UIF. We don't pay UIF. And just looking at the Treasury regulations, 11482, it does allow for the non-recovery of debts in the case of if it exposes someone to hardship, which I think was the case of many of these in this case, that these were civil servants who had retired not on a large pension, and recovery of that debt would have placed them in a quite a negative situation.
The FFC, then I'll take some more comments. Chairman, just briefly, I think one should see the BRICS Bank in a broader international context. And it comes to the question of voting rights. Right from the start, the objection of the BRICS, the BRIC countries even, was against the World Bank and IMF, which was unequal share in voting as to money put in. And this bank was, in a sense, a counter the homogeny of the World Bank and IMF. And so the insistence on what you put in is what you vote on. And so there is the equality, and obviously it's a huge difficulty because we are now equal to the second biggest economy in the world in terms of bringing our side and pay the same amount. And at the end, as already said, the aim is that this bank will be controlled by its original members. So the 55% will always have that part of the agreement, and so that it's not lost to other investors coming in. So South Africa will still play a major voice in it, commensurate with the money it's put in. In terms of a long-term investor of the value, it is clearly a long-term investment. And whether South Africa is going to get benefit out of the money they put in depends on us. In terms of using it, making wise decisions, and how the borrowed money is going to be used. If it's going to be used on white elephants, clearly it's not going to be a wise and a fruitful investment that we're making at this stage. On our strategic assets, I think usual understanding of strategic assets looks at the purpose of an asset, what you're doing with it in terms of the service it delivers, rather than whether it's generating income. The government is not there to play the stock market on buying shares just to generate that. That wouldn't be regarded, to my mind at least, to be a strategic asset. Thomas, generally want to say anything?
I think there's only one left, which was on the debt to GDP ratio. And we agree with you that debt to GDP ratio hasn't reached a plateau yet. In fact, it's expected to reach a plateau at the end of the 2078. At around 44.5% of GDP. But what we are saying here is the impact of the installment, this particular installment for the special appropriation bill, is not going to have any knock-on effect on whatever the trajectory of the debt or of the debt to GDP ratio, because of the way it is proposed to be financed now. So we're not commenting on the overall debt to GDP trajectory, but on the impact of this special installment is financed in budget neutral way, so does not the direction of the decision to do the decision. Yes.
Thank you. Just a brief comment on the unauthorized expenditure. I tend to agree with FFC that we shouldn't take so long to process this matter. I don't know where the problem is, but I don't know when did this serve before SCOPA as well. But we're actually dealing with 2008 in some respects, which is quite a long time ago. I think if we can agree that these matters should be processed quite early, so I agree with the FSC there. Because if we deal with them early, we can engage departments, because sometimes unauthorized expenditure is really lack of good planning. Mm-hmm. I think, as Honorable Travers was saying, it's not like, you know, somebody, perhaps there's someone who we need to basically impose sanctions on, but we can take the matters up with the leadership of the department, especially if it's recurring. You know, you want to do something, then you do it with the money you don't have, but it's justifiable, and then you do it again the following year as if you didn't know that you have to do that. So if this matter has come in, we can take them up so that because I believe if we improve planning, we will avoid a lot of these unauthorized expenditures. And if we deal with them, these things early, we can deal with them whilst people are still in the public service, not when they are gone. So I think it's just a comment on that one. I can take some last round, Honorable Schopenstaller, Honorable Gomo, Honorable Singh, Honorable Sheikh Imam. In that order, then we will wrap up.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on this matter that you're commenting on, I just want us to actually get the more information on it so that we avoid a recurrence of such tendencies. We need to actually know exactly, as this committee, what caused the delay, so that we can apply our minds wisely. On the one that it was asked by Honorable Nyalung, the writing off of irrecoverable debts. You know, it's when I just listen to it, it's a bit worrisome, because I'm thinking of a situation where this some of this, but not all of them, some of these people just caused the debt, knowing very well that I'm resigning next month, and a person gets away with murder. You know, the responsibility of this committee is to follow the money of the state. We can't just accept it at face value like that. We need a schedule. We need a schedule of those bad debts written off, detailed, so that we actually look at it. I don't think they are all uniform. Some of them may be due to genuine delays of systems in the department. They could not be dealt with on time, but some of them might have been caused by people who knew that I am going on retirement next week, and they know very well that they will fall under that category of people who will not be followed because they are on retirement. So I beg you, Chair, that we actually have that schedule submitted to the committee so that we sit down and apply our minds
and also on the other matter, so that we actually see the document, so that next time, because next time we don't want excuses like this.
Thanks, Honorable Cobb.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, I'm going to request a bit of some additional information or probably some new input. Some of them, they may have been given to this committee, and I was not present at that committee. The first one, Chairperson, is that I think in order for us to actually get insight onto the inputs that we were given today, we need to have the document of the treaty, so that we actually get an understanding of the treaty itself, exactly what is covered in the treaty itself, not to keep on hearing that, you know, this is covered in the treaty, but just the detail of the treaty. Secondly, my second point is that do we know which state assets were sold in order to mobilize for this 2 billion rand? Which exactly state assets were sold? Remember, we're working towards our first installment. And noting what was said by the FSC when we got an input today, the very first input, where it was said that, you know, once sold, you no longer have it. So we need to know the exact assets which were sold. The third question is, who or which institutions will adjudicate should disagreements emerge among the BRIC partners? I think all of that can also be sourced from the treaty document. This is important because we are committing significant budgets onto this whole agreement. So exactly who are the people that need to actually come in when issues are said not to be going okay? Has there been any assessment to the contributions we'll be making till 2021 and 2022 and the impact on our fiscal deficit? And lastly, I do take note of the input from the FSC, and I must state that my gut feeling is that what is being said here is very little as compared to what is not being said. I think the FSC is very careful in addressing matters. I don't think they are too comfortable with this matter. You know, the way things are being said here, look at the pros and cons. And you look at the issue on one of the pros and cons. But no pros and cons say it all. Or in between the lines, one gets a feeling that a lot is being said. But there's one area of your pros and cons which I would like you just to explain to me. And that is the area of where there's this large presence of the NDB financial products which may crowd our domestic banks and which will make that may not be able to compete for deposits with the NDB. Now, the problem here is the issue of the SMMEs and exactly how they are going, they could be marginalized. You know, that's why I'm saying that the FSC is saying so much in between the lines. Your input, we will definitely keep it, this input here. We'll keep it because I have a feeling that in a couple of years, most of what you didn't say or what you actually said here may come to pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Pastor, you follow up?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that on this issue of the staff debt, can we have our staff actually getting the Auditor General's report on that issue, on that, yeah, so that we really go deep into detail. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Six.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just wanted to clarify that issue about the bill that I was referring to. There was a bill that gave rise to the loan, the initial loan that was converted last year, and that's the bill I'm talking about. We know that that bill, for which one of the conditions is that an agreement must be drawn up between ESCOM and the Minister of Finance, where monies should have been paid. Not one cent was paid. You know that, okay? So that's the goal I'm referring to, and that's what I'm saying, the conditions. So conditions is that an agreement must be drawn up. The other point I'm going to make, Honorable Chair, is that that agreement, I requested that agreement, and I was from Treasury, and was told that that agreement was between Treasury and ESCOM. So you're aware of this. So that's the issue that I wanted to make as far as that is. I'm not saying that we must get into a debate, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Honorable Sheikha.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start off by saying, sorry, my colleague across the road here from, I don't know too much about it, but I think you're going to educate me today. I'm still saying that it does affect in terms of your debt to your GDP because, yeah, you're selling an asset that's generating income, so you're getting less revenue, yet you are still borrowing more. Your expenditure is still far exceeding your income, and that's why I'm saying there's a danger there. So I'm saying that that's where the challenge is. The second thing is that for me, I think we must not run away from the fact. We have to give 2 billion rand by January. We have to also budget for another 4 billion rand in the financial year, which is a few months away. So we're looking in essence for 6 billion rand. The issue of 18 months, it's already 6 months late, and it's going to have to be paid in this particular financial year. And so what we're really going to be looking for 2 billion, and 2 months later we're going to be budgeting for another 4 billion rand. I think that's what you mean. But I want some clarity on the scalable shares, because if I understood correctly, I think maybe you said it may share to you that you could call for it at any time. So I'm just worried about when is this any time that you need to, because why are we paying these 4 billion rand a year, and what if they call for this as well, this other additional 8 billion, or I don't know if there's a period of time thereafter that it must be paid for. So that's where my concern, but I'm sure you can just guide me on that. The other issue I have is, and I'm concerned about this, which is nothing to do with the bank now, I'm concerned, and I know we have serious challenges in terms of the poverty level, and we're trying to address that. I'm worried at the alarming rate that the child support grants are increasing, really. If you look at the table, at the way it's increasing, it's frightening. And for me, it's a little bit of concern. And I'm also worried about the money we're spending on Zimbabwe, to be honest with you, and the issues, which for me seems to be another problem. But I'm glad the issue of the general export incentive has been addressed, that the internal audit processes in place. And this Pumalani Lodge I'm concerned about, because initially from a 6.5, it went to a 15.7. Now, are we saying that the balance is all in terms of cost? Because I think in terms of interest, and I think you'll agree, there's what you call that in duplum rule, isn't it? Law. In duplum law, which says that your interest in this cannot be more than your capital amount. So if we take that into consideration, you can guide us. I don't know how it actually ended up to be so much. Who owns Pumalani Lodge? What is this really all about? If somebody can give us some guidance on this, I'll appreciate it. Thank you.
My understanding was that the callable shares will only arise if the bank needs more injection in the future. Because at the moment it will get this initial capital that all the members are putting in, which will amount to $10 billion. So I think they are unlikely to ask for more money in the next 10, 20 years, I'm sure. But we don't know. But I don't think it will be in the next few years. They still have to use the $10 billion first. So I don't think we should fear that it will be the next few months. They have to get this one first, use it, and then maybe in future. But you were saying in your experience, it has been unlikely in other institutions that they call for it at all, but they may, but I don't think very soon. I just want the Honorable Sheikh Imam not to worry that we may be asked to put more money next year. It won't happen. But I think the other question about that we have to budget for 2016-17, I think they did say that Treasury in the MTF process, they've now started. So when the minister announced the budget next year, we'd have taken care of the fact that there's another 4 billion needed next year. Honorable Fick, then I'll allow them to respond.
I'm sorry, sir, it's related to this. That's why I wanted to get it in before the response. So it will, okay, sorry, a question, will it negatively affect our balance sheet because it was mentioned that we have to make a provision? So, can I just get that? Thanks.
National Treasury first.
Negatively affect the balance, I suppose you mean the budget or membership, member.
Comment made by the FSC, no? Maybe I'll ask them to come to respond to it. Yeah.
Return on investment for the shares is going to be higher than the return on the bank, but we don't know what the return on the bank is.
The FSC will respond to that, yeah.
Okay.
You want them to come in first on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the proposal without detail on the actual asset that was sold, one cannot give a conclusive answer to what Honorable is asking. But from a general principle, if you finance an installment by selling off your asset, and that installment is used for building up another asset which is, in your value judgment, equivalent or better, which is why you are moving from one asset to the other. If you are going to an asset that, in your value judgment, is a better asset, then it should affect your notional balance sheet positive. But that's the if that we really don't know here. What is the heart of this question is Vodacom versus New Development Bank, which is the better place for government to be in.
We understand that. We understand. National Treasury can come. Thank you.
Yes. Perhaps just to answer to Honourable Member's question around the treaty. The bill for ratification of the New Development Bank went through the standing committee of finance, so and following that to Parliament. So that's the route that we took, and I am told that the articles have been circulated in today's meeting. So most of the information will be in there. In terms of arbitration, the section Article 46 of the articles provide for a process of ratification, and it basically lays out and explains the steps that need to be taken in order to do this. So basically, if I may read it quickly, it says that a disagreement should arise between the bank and a country which has ceased to be a member, or between the bank and any member after adoption of a decision to terminate the operation of the bank. Such disagreement shall be submitted to arbitration by a tribunal of three arbitrators. One of the arbitrators shall be appointed by the bank, another by the country concerned, and the third, unless the parties would agree, by an authority as may be approved by the Board of Governors. If all efforts to reach a unanimous agreement fail, decisions shall be made by a majority of the three arbitrators. And the third arbitrator shall be empowered to settle all questions of procedure in case where the parties are in disagreement. So there is an inbuilt arbitration mechanism within the agreement. Yes, I think that's the question that was asked. With regard to the what sale of state assets, I will leave it to our colleagues here.
Okay. Sale of assets. My understanding is that it's the border commission.
Yes.
Is that the case?
Yes.
It's the border commission. The 2 billion will come from the sale of border commission. I think Honorable Komo asked that question.
Yes.
Are the other assets we are selling? Treasury, you want to confirm that? Is the Vodacom shares?
The amount that came from the Vodacom shares was more than what's required for the Eskom, so it's that additional amount that is being used for. We're not intend selling any. We expect the second payment for the Vodacom shares will be sufficient to cover.
Okay, yes.
Thank you, Jay. Just on the... Yeah, on the question of the bad debts written off, for the question that Honourable Shoka Sithole asked, I'm happy to provide you with a list of all the debts, and you'll be able to see for each individual person what exactly was the reason that happened. On Pumlani Lodge, this was the owner. It's a foreign owner. I mean, this is why the bilateral investment treaty came into account, into action on this. So the owner is, the name I've got here is W. Schlepper. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. He's a Swiss man, I think, Swiss person. I don't know who that is. but the original claim was for 10 million Swiss francs. The final award was 6 million that was given. So we got to 15 because it was the award amount plus interest plus legal costs. So there was the other amount was paid for from voted funds. It was only the 6.1 million that was interest that was unauthorized expenditure.
Honorable Komo, are you satisfied with the...
One question to ask.
Oh, okay. Because I know you said you wanted more information, and they said there's this agreement. Does it cover you what you needed, or should they still get more?
It partly covers, Chairperson, in the sense that, yes, we have received the information. But I think we received the information today, here, when we're here, which would not really assist us that much, Chairperson. So a recommendation is that for such type of delicate and essential information, if it could be given to the committee, timely as in a few days before, so that we actually go through it, because I wouldn't have even asked the question if I had received this time as the chairperson. Thanks, Chairman.
Oh, yeah, there's a problem. I don't think they emailed to you. They emailed to all members, but I don't think you are recorded as a permanent member of this committee. We'll have to make a plan with your party, because you always come. So maybe they must decide you are the member, and then we can make sure get all the documents.
Thank you,
sir. Yeah. There was before Honorable Shopestol, I think the FFC wanted to say something. Then I'll come to you, and I think Honorable Sheikh, you also want to announce one, and then we can close.
Yes, this was in response to the Honorable Komo's question on the crowding out of certain domestic banks and implications for SMEs. I think your observation is quite correct that we are measured when we communicate that call. And it's deliberate. We don't want to mislead the Appropriations Committee. These are based on probabilities. Remember when I started, I said no loan has yet been disbursed.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are talking about are things that have come out of our modeling exercise. And all those things are not reality, but are in the realm of possibilities. So we don't want to come and communicate an estimation as if it's a fact. It's not a fact. The reason why we communicate it is so that when you exercise oversight, you ask the executive, what measures have you put in place to ensure that this crowd out does not take place. That's the essence of the advice that we give to you. It's not that we have reservations about it, but we want to forearm you on areas in which you want to ensure that when government, so when the executive comes to account to you, you ask questions on, so what is it that you've done to preclude this negative outcome from coming on board. Then, Honorable Sheikh, on the debt to GDP aspect, again, we can take the discussion on and on, but I'll stick to my guns that given this nature of finances, in this particular case, if we accept that we are on a medium-term expenditure framework that we know, and we know exactly the budget, the deficit for this year, the one that we are restricting to 3.8%, the one for 2017-18, if those that were communicated in the medium-term budget policy statement, we take a starting point. There is no reason why this way of financing the special appropriation bill should add to those budget deficits. But if it was some other way of financing, so another way of financing could be increasing taxes. Again, it will be debt neutral. So the reason that you have sold off your assets and forgone a dividend that was coming from it is because in your national revenue available, you have factored that already, the loss of that dividend for the next 3 years, which is why you communicated that the amount available for this year is going to be X amount, the one for next year is going to be et cetera, et cetera. Otherwise, if they've not factored that in, that compromises the credibility of the medium-term budget policy statement. And we think this is what is at the heart of this proposal, is to ensure that there's credibility in what was communicated in the medium-term budget policy statement. Then, I know that you're not expecting answers, but just on your observation around child support grants and your alarm that they are rising, and within the context of the developments that took place around medium-term budget policy statement, on a protest around university fees. What is interesting is analysis that's beginning to come out now in terms of the nature of most of the students that were protesting. And latest research talks about something that's called a survival curve. Survival curve meaning we are able to track these university students over a 20-25 year period and work out probabilities of would they have survived to become university students or not. And the main contribution of child support grants on the education front is it has managed to make people that otherwise would not have gotten educated to survive through the early phases of basic education and get into university education. And when they get to university education, because they are products of child support grants, you can understand that although they don't fall in what you would call poorest of the poor, because they survived from poorest of the poor that fall out of the system, still they expect children of child support grants to be able to afford those high fees. But my point being, there's nothing inherently wrong about child support grants, and probably, and I'll stick my neck out, that's probably one of the best interventions in the last 20 years that we've seen. When you look at a return for the money that has been spent compared to any intervention we've tried. But what we should be against is when there are leakages of the nature that we are discussing today under the finance bill, because those are leakages that is preventing more children from surviving the attrition rates. And that's why we should be against these leakages, not the program itself. The program itself, we shouldn't really be against it on the basis of the evidence.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the issue of Honorable Nkomo being satisfied with, she says she's a little bit satisfied, but not completely. And as you know, you see, the Women's League will always support women's endeavors. So I would suggest that our staff get the report from the Committee on Finance on this issue so that we can actually empower Honorable Nkomo on that issue. And secondly, I hear my friend, Honorable Sheikh Imam, is worried about Zimbabwe. We spending money on Zimbabwe. I just want to say, you know, if we make enough efforts and deal with Zimbabwe, we're going to save a lot of revenue for the country. We've got a lot of problems because people are always entering our space. The last one on the child support grant. You know, between 1988 and 1994, as the Women's League Underground, we used to take statistics of the hospital of Dinzwalo in Bushbuck Ridge and Bushbuck and Mapulani, and look at the mortality rate of children. I must tell you that we since 1994, there are many children that survive after 5 years, that reach the age of five and beyond, from the, because we continue to keep record of those hospitals. So the child support grant actually deals with the right to life for little poor children.
Honorable Sheikh Imam, you will conclude.
Thank you, Sheikh. Yeah, some very quick ones. I just wanted some clarity on the issue of terms of officer reference and period of occupying these offices by the, I think, the governors and the board of directors, because remember our country's presidents will change, somebody else will come in. So I just wanted to clarify what happens in that case. How do they change when our presidents change and things like that, okay? If you can just clarify that. And I wanted to know of your guidance. Given the present economic situation in the globe, do you think it's a conducive environment to be investing at this stage? Just your guidance. I'm putting you in a corner, you know. And finally, I think I just want to say that I agree with my colleague here that you're comparing Vodacom shares to the New Development Bank. But I think the argument was, what do you do? Do you sell something, a business that is successful and giving you revenue, or do you sell one that is not succeeding, sell that and then invest it into a business like the New Development Bank, which will possibly give you a revenue? I think that's what the argument is. But we leave it there. Thank you.
We leave it at that. Ms. Maltreger wants to say something.
Yes, Chair. It's just the response to the question around the terms.
of appointment. The in terms of the governance structure, the chairperson of the board of the bank will serve a 1-year term, and the president of the bank, who is the CEO of the bank, will serve a 5-year term. There's been a rotation structure that has been agreed amongst member countries in terms of who will start. So, for example, the chair of the board, executive board of directors is Brazil for this year, and the president of the bank, who is the CEO, the slot went to India. So the first president of the bank is a gentleman called Mr. K.V. Kamath, who is of Indian nationality, and he will serve for, I think the articles have space for the governors to determine whether he can serve a second term, but he will serve for 5 years. So all of those issues have been agreed amongst the members. They were just reluctant to put them into the articles because obviously should the bank open up membership and to others, they may need to change. So at the moment, that is what has been agreed. Yes.
Okay. Is that all from Treasury? You will send the documents that have been requested. FSC, from your side?
Perhaps the last comment to the Honourable Tech. It's a very difficult environment. Our partners in BRICS, at least three of them, are struggling with growth. Brazil is, I think, almost close to negative. Russia is in the negative. We are there. Originally, what bound the three together, or the four, was high growth rates, and they were leading the pack in the world. And that was because they're so diverse countries, that was a uniting factor. What we must see in the BRICS initiative is that it is going to allow for better economic development of access to markets. This is only one aspect of BRICS, which works in conjunction with other initiatives from BRICS. It's opening markets to each other, and then collectively the product, the initiative, should benefit member countries. But finally, this is to be funding development activities more than simply getting dividends out. But this is the infrastructure, because the bank is very clear it's about infrastructure development that they can do so. And the model that we've selected in terms of growth is going to be infrastructure intensive investment. So this is in terms of the right direction. This is part of what we have in the National Development Plan. So if it's well managed and well used, I think it would be worth the money that we've lost in Verdun.
Well, I think we've done well for today. Honorable members, if you agree, let's do minutes on Tuesday. So I'm able to release you early. It's a Friday today. And we've been empowered. I feel after this term I can be a DG of Treasury. beginning to understand this thing so much. But thank you very much to National Treasury. FSC, as always, you give us good analysis. Honorable Nkomo wants you to be more punchy, but we understand that sometimes you deal with scenarios, probabilities, but we understand. I think this is very useful. We will, honorable members, on Tuesday deal with the report for the Division of Revenue, because it needs to go in for adoption on Wednesday, and we'll also meet Public Works.